Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
All right, Ivy Podcast listeners, thank you guys for tuning into another episode of the Ivy Podcast. I'm your podcast host, Angela Alberti. If you've had a chance to check out our episodes this year, then you know that I am all about two things: female empowerment and women in leadership roles across organizations all around the globe. And the second theme is the workforce ecosystem and everything that drives and demands talent deployment strategies. That's exactly the case in today's episode. I'm so excited to sit down with Allison. Allison, thank you for being on the show. Can you give the audience a quick little elevator pitch on yourself and your background?
Absolutely, Angela. It is such a pleasure to be here. Thank you. My name is Allison Barron. I'm a client executive with EY, global professional services firm. I'm out of our Detroit office, been with the firm about 9 years. My purpose is to create meaningful connections so that our greatest successes can be achieved. My heart is with our people, and I'm really excited to dive into that here today with you.
That is awesome. All right. So big brand name on the show. And you know, you're one of those people, Allison, that I had a chance to speak to through the prep session that just have a powerful presence. And I'm hopeful that we can have that same, sort of mindset here in today's episode. But before we get into all of the good questions that we plan to hop into, let's do a little bit of a deeper dive, a chronological career timeline, if you will. I think it's very powerful for the women and just the general listener listening into today's episode to hear about your background and really how you came up in this space and where you got your humble beginnings. Do you mind diving into that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I truly hope that it inspires others. If I start with my educational background, my degree is in elementary education. I went to Michigan State University, amazing university, and left believing that I was going to be a third grade teacher for my entire life. And I tried it, and it was not what I wanted. You know, it was a time when all the baby boomers were supposed to be retiring, and that didn't happen. And I just wasn't getting the fulfillment that I knew that I needed through my career in exploring education. So I went back to my roots, and I say my roots because, one, I grew up in a household with a father who owned his own business. He owned a high liability insurance company in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And as a young kid, I was brought to his office every Saturday, and you know, you learned how to work hard and play hard. And I went back to those roots of knowing I wanted to be in business. So out of college, I started with a very small trade show supply company in sales. It was a very humble beginning career where throwing a pop-up trade show supply, trade show pop-up in my trunk and going over to organizations and really doing that selling at 21 years old. But at the same time, I loved it because I loved the personal connection of getting to know people, understand what their marketing campaigns were, what they were trying to put out to the market, and see what solution I had to help them. I did that for about a year and realized, it was a small company. It was a great, great beginning, but I wanted more. So then I was in a print marketing company for 7.5 years and started, project management all the way up through to sales and sales enablement. Again, loved it. And what I loved about that organization was the connection with my clients, getting to understand again what the message is they're looking to put out there and work with them to make it happen. So many great stories through that organization of, late night press checks, being out on the manufacturing floor with my client, making sure everything was to their standards. But really just, pleasing the client just really is what filled me up. Was there for about 7.5 years when a good friend of mine said, hey, I moved over to EY. This place is unbelievable, Allison. You need to come over. And I have not looked back since. Angela, I'll tell you, I'm 40 years old and I plan on retiring from this organization. Wow. I, for the past almost 9 years now, have been with EY's business development organization, again, focused on delighting our clients. I am now in a client executive role where I am responsible for the overall relationship for one of our largest clients in the firm, responsible for the growth, sales, and identification of opportunity, but most importantly, responsible for really creating the trusted relationships So, common theme, I can understand what our clients need, what delights them, and how to bring a solution to them that will help them with their most challenging issues. And I love every second of it.
That is awesome. And I just, I want to pause for a second and almost reflect on one of the statements that you made. You plan on retiring there, and such a bold statement to make in this day and age of working world, where almost, you think about it, the traditional working model is almost antiquated. It's almost extinct, dare I say. Gone are the days of that 30-year tenure where you cash in the 401k, but you are still living it and breathing it. And we got to hop into why, right? Especially in this very fast-paced, remote working world since the pandemic, most companies have had to make that stride of how are we going to gain a winning culture, you know, keep that camaraderie in the digital age, but you guys have been doing it for a long time. So tell us a little bit more about that culture and why, you know, you are dedicating the rest of your career to a company like EY.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel so fortunate. It is a winning culture. So when I introduced myself, I started with my purpose. I designed and am able to articulate my purpose because of the focus EY puts on our people. Our purpose as an organization is to build a better working world. And I believe every day this is not just lip service. What we do with our clients and what we do internally with our people is truly focused on building that better working world. We focus on mentorship and coaching and helping people identify what their purpose is, provide so many opportunities outside of our client work to invest in our own well-being, in areas we want to continue to grow from a knowledge perspective, give back to our communities. It's an expectation. It's not even just like, oh, it's a nice to have you. EY has all these professional networks you can join, or you know, you can have some mentoring programs. It is absolutely an expectation and part of our performance metrics that we are a part of building a better working world. And I am so proud of that. In my career, I've had the unbelievable opportunity to grow a gender equity program from the ground up with an amazing team that's now sold all over the globe through our firm. That wasn't part of my job description. At the time, I was an account manager. At no part of that was the part of my job description. Mm-hmm. But I was given the leeway and autonomy to say, do you think something's here? And I said, absolutely. Go for it. Go get it. And that is what I'm so proud of with this firm.
Wow. That's incredible. And it's inspiring to me on the backside, you know, being a co-founder of a company that's trying to live and breathe in that same mantra. So amazing. And I keep reverting back to some of the things that you mentioned, because it's that perfect tee up to my next question, gender equality in the workforce. Talk to me about, and maybe you can educate us, why the need for such a program. You know, let's set the landscape of gender and the imbalance in the working world for the female versus the male versus the LGBTQ. I mean, we can go into so many different directions here, but why the need for a program like that? And really what you're hopeful for future women at work?
Oh, it's such a loaded question. We could talk for hours about this. So why the data? I mean, look at the data. We know that women are underrepresented in, you know, higher levels within organizations and on boards. My own experiences growing up. So I grew up in New Jersey, came to Michigan. And as you can imagine, from a culture perspective, there was
a little different
there. And I'll be honest, some of my first roles, no one knew what to do with me. Like, she's a little abrasive. I'm like, no, this is just me. It's just who I am.
Yeah.
But really identifying that there is not equality in the workforce. And I've done a lot of research and talked to a lot of different women, men, people of all genders about this and their experiences. And what it comes down to is the workforce of today doesn't work for anybody. And it was created, and I'm going to be provocative here, by men for men a long time ago, and doesn't work for anybody anymore. So how do we understand what is it going to take, and what does every person's role, regardless of their gender, what can they do to be a part of creating an environment within our working systems to create equitable experiences? We want everyone to have the same at bat, everyone to have the same opportunity. You have to work hard. It's not saying just because you're a woman, rise to the top. You need to bust your butt. You need to do well. But I want to make sure that Susie has the same opportunity Jack does. That's why I do this. Also, personally, I have two young daughters. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. If I'm not working on gender equality, I'm not doing my duty as a mother and as a woman in the workforce.
Boom. Wow. And that's absolutely true. I mean, if I could throw in my own personal testimony, it wasn't through my own recent experience that I saw women in leadership roles. And I'll go a step further, non-white women in leadership roles. Right. Yes. And I think that we're at the crux of something special, and there's people in the industry like yourself that are looking to drive that change, which really inspires and builds a fire within me. And I hope that there's future hopeful women that are listening into today's episode that can feel the same way. And I want to couple this with what's happening in the digital world, right? We all of a sudden find ourselves in talent pools that are looking beyond the overall metrics of health insurance, 401k, what we would consider benefits or typical benefits packages. Now they're looking at what is this company doing from a social stance? How do they feel about certain topics I'm passionate about? What are they doing about equality within the workforce? And leaders across organizations, which I know EY helps with across many, many different organizations, are all of a sudden finding themselves in a vastly different landscape than even 10 years ago. And they have to prepare themselves as being a leader in this working world and this digital age. Any feedback that you could give to that, you know, leader or would be leader at some future state for this digital world of work that we find ourselves in?
Yeah, absolutely. And I start with what do the employees of today need? And our workforce today needs something that's completely different than what they needed a few years ago. And I'll be honest, tying this to the gender equity piece, there's some gold here. Like, there's some really good stuff happening.
Yeah.
So if I think about leadership in the digital age, leading someone through a computer screen is so different than being able to walk down the hall, grabbing a cup of coffee, having a closed door meeting, or just having that feeling of my door is always open, you know, as a leader. Wow. Yeah. As leaders, we want to say our doors are always open, but now it's behind a computer screen. Yeah. Now, how often do you just go and call someone? It's usually, well, let me look at their calendar, let me schedule some time, or maybe I'll shoot them a ping and see if they're available. It's not like it used to be where you could just walk down the hall and say, hey, Angela, I have an issue. I need to step into your office. We need to talk. That's hard. So as leaders, what I challenge so many of the people that I talk to about this is, one, create the personal connection. That has to be the cornerstone of your leadership style. And if it's not, you might want to question whether you should be a people leader. And I also think that's very fair. I think assessing people leadership at this point in time right now is very fair. But if you're in it, you want to get to know your team on a personal level. Personal, you know, family life, what do they like to do for on their weekends, travel, cooking, reading, what have you. And really invest that time to, even if it's like jotting notes down, say, all right, well, let me write down their kids' names and their spouse's name or their dog's name or their most recent pet, their pet or their most recent vacation spot. So that when you go back and have another conversation, you can kind of remember what is important to this team member. But take that time in the beginning of your conversations to just stop and say, Angela, how are you? Yeah. And it's interesting, when you and I talked a few weeks ago, we started this. I was like, hey, like, how are you? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of that pause of like, no, like, I really want to know, mm-hmm. how are you? This isn't just a nicety and then let you jump in. It's as a leader, making that connection, inspiring your, especially on one-on-ones, turn your video on. Let's look at each other. Again, not going to get the same as a face-to-face, but I want to see your facial expressions. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to see if you're like, oh yeah, no, Allison, I'm fine. Let's jump into blah, blah, blah. Let's take a pause. Are you okay?
Yeah.
That to me is the most critical piece. And then being available, having that conversation of what is the best method to connect with you? Do I want you to send me a Teams ping or a text message, Slack message? Pick up the phone and call me. That's what I always say to so many of my teams, like, pick up the phone and call me. Like, you know, I answer my phone usually if I know the number, but it's really, and again, this goes back to my childhood of my father teaching me people buy from people. Everything's about relationships. And that has stuck with me forever. Get to know someone on a personal relationship level. What is important to them? What are they looking to achieve? How can I be a part of that? How can I be a part of your growth? How can you be a part of mine? This is a two-way street. as a leader, I mean, I've led people for majority of my career. I get so much out of mentoring others and coaching others that makes me a better executive. Mm-hmm. So I also want our people leaders to be thinking about that as what I give, I'm going to get tenfold back.
That's incredible. You honestly just dropped the mic on that one, because there's so many, it's so easy for us to get distracted and to see the notifications come up and to get inundated with the emails, and to just really pause and put all of that to the side and get to know your people, get to know what they're about, get to know what they bring to the table, but also their background and how they bring this to the table every single day for the organization is so important. And it really is the only way that we can keep this personable when we're behind our screens all day, every day. So some powerful words of wisdom. And I think that through that process, you guys at EY have done a fantastic job of just the value of mentorship or knowing how to get personal. I think, you know, building these mentorship programs is one way to certainly do that as well. But can you talk about how that giving back ideology has really helped you guys as a culture, and really just some your general perspective on the value of mentorship, and even taking it a step further and having that sponsor that's aligning you through your next path in the career?
Absolutely. And the key here is intentionality. It is a word that I use so often. So part of this gender equity program that I've been a part of building at EY, it's called Power Up. It's an acronym, and W starts for widen your network. And we talk about the difference of coaches, mentors, and sponsors, and the importance of a few things. One, making sure you have the people in your network within those roles that still serve you. So not just keeping folks around because you're friends. Great to have friends. Let's all have friends. Not a problem. Let's look at our professional network and be intentional about who we're connecting with. But then how are we using that network? Not being afraid to ask our network for help. Not being afraid to ask our network to help introduce us with people or give us different opportunities, but identifying again, so this role of, you know, think mentors, identifying opportunities of, I need experiences in public speaking. I need experiences in leading a diverse team, making sure you can bounce those ideas off your mentor to say, hey, what do you see that I'm missing? Where are some opportunities we can identify? Help me get to that next level. Let's have that conversation. I'll tell you, and I always chuckle a little bit when I think about this, but whenever you have, you know, conversations with a mentor or a boss or what have you, and you say, you know, what feedback do you have for me? And they say, oh, just keep doing what you're doing. Don't ever accept that answer. Ask again, say, no, okay, great. Like if keep doing what you're doing is the answer, they're like, where's my promotion? Where am I going? What am I doing? Yeah. But no, it's, I want to keep growing, and feedback and opportunities to grow are how we're going to get there. So using that mentor as someone you can bounce ideas off of, you can take risks. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to not do something perfect. Have that mentor there that can really push you in the right direction. But to your point, Angela, taking that a step further, and this is something that I learned so significantly at EY, is the power of a sponsor. And when I think about a sponsor, it's who has the political clout that is going to be talking about me in the room when I am not there.
Yeah.
But what's important with this sponsorship role is not, that doesn't just happen. It can, but it's my job to make sure that I am, one, asking for a sponsor, formalizing a sponsor, and then putting the work in so it is easy for that person to go in a room and say, I need to tell you guys what Allison just did. I need to share what Allison's working on right now so we can go inspire others to do it. And hey, let's take a look at her career trajectory and make sure we're giving her the right opportunities to get her to the path. Because if I'm the best for my firm, if I'm the best for EY, I'm being put in positions where I can continue to grow. I need those sponsors in that room who are making the decisions, having my name on the tip of their tongue. But again, what I go so strongly back to, and this is a big challenge for women, how do you ask for that sponsor? How do you identify, one, the right sponsor? You want to make sure, again, it's someone with political clout, mm-hmm. that is in the right circles, that will have the voice to talk about you when you're not in that room. So identification is huge. But then that conversation of, Angela, I'd really love to share with you. Here's my career path. Here's what I'm thinking. Here are all the things I've been working on. Here's where I'm stretching myself and growing. I have areas I need to grow on, and here's what I'm focusing on. I would love for you to sponsor me as I'm looking to get to this next level. Here's the work I'm going to put in. And here's my ask of you. Here's the circle of influence I need you to impact. Will you go and have these conversations on my behalf? And when other conversations happen, bring my name up. I'll tell you, it's really interesting. You ask people to be in your network, mentor, sponsor. Really haven't run into many situations where people say no, but you need to make sure you're putting in the work to empower them to have the conversations that will make impact.
And that I know is the hardest thing for women to do. It's a contributor to why men find themselves making, 25 cents more per dollar earned than the woman 75 cents, is because they do have the tenacity to go in and ask for that and be that confident in the everyday working world. And we can get into the droves of why that is. But I have never asked for a sponsorship. And I can guarantee you that most of the women that I've worked alongside with have never asked for that. Now, mentorship, I think that mm-hmm. that commitment level is almost, it's a lot looser. It doesn't have mm-hmm. to be necessarily in the same organization. You're not dealing with the cultural impact to what that ask can do. So those are all the things that are happening in the mind of what's preventing you from taking that first step. But I think you've broken it down into a T on how you can achieve those steps. So thank you for that. I know that that's going to be powerful for some of our listeners to listen into today. And I have to go here and I have to ask this question. You mentioned you have two little girls.
I do.
What is some advice that you can give for somebody that's also maybe selfishly asking this, with two younger children? How have you determined a good way to balance motherhood and what is probably most days a demanding career?
When I figure it out, I'll let you know.
The mystery lives on. You don't have it all figured out in a 3-minute response.
Exactly. I'm going to share advice that I received from a woman from EY mm-hmm. that I respect greatly. And it is words of wisdom that have stuck with me since the day she shared it. And she said, "I am a mom, I'm a wife, and I am a powerful female executive. And most days I am not great at all three, and that's okay. What balance means is finding on whatever that time frame is, a week, a month, 3 days, whatever it is you need personally, that you have that balance of, okay, today, man, I rocked it. I am a killer female executive. I love what I'm doing. I'm filling up my cup in what I'm doing at work. Awesome. I've been home in 3 days. I don't feel like the best mom or wife right now. Mm-hmm. That's okay, because I know tomorrow morning I'm going to head home and I'm going to spend the rest of my week and my weekend dedicated to my family." So that to me has resonated so much of those days for me personally. For like this week, I've been gone.
Yeah,
I don't love it. I miss my kids dearly. I miss my husband dearly. I also feel very fortunate. I have a very supportive spouse who is at home helping with everything while I'm gone. But once I get home tomorrow, I'm going to make sure at 5 o'clock, I shut it down and I'm with my girls and with my husband after work. I'm still going to work. I'm not going to, take the rest of the week off, mm-hmm. but it's making sure that balances. Some days I'm going to kill it at work. Other days, that's not going to be my number one priority. And it balances out for me.
Other days you're dealing with the cold and flu season and going in circles with the kiddos, right?
But I'll tell you, and I think it's, we'd be remiss for not mentioning it. There were a lot of really horrible things that came out of this pandemic. There's no getting around that. But there's also some great things that came out of it. The now, from what I see, the overwhelming acceptance of, I am not only a female executive, I am also a mom and I am also a wife. So that when I'm on camera at home, just last week had both kids home, so many of my calls, one or two of my daughters was on my lap because that's the comfort they needed at that time. Wow. Not a single meeting that I had did somebody say, "Oh, do you want to we can't do this right now. Brooke's on Allison's lap. What's going on? No, they're like, oh my gosh, is she okay? She's so cute. Okay, now let's get back to work. And we can do both when we need to. Do I want to do that all the time? No, I don't. And are there times that in the day, middle of the day, I'll shut it down to take care of a sick kid? Absolutely. But I also have no problem sharing with my teams and my clients, hey guys, I have sick kids home today. Usually there's four more people who are like, yep, me too. Yep, me too. Or like, yeah, my dogs are barking, or I have the landscaper coming today. But we've normalized, and I hope we continue down this path, we've normalized the fact that we are all human beings. We are not robots. We are not only the executive. We are human beings with different facets of our lives that we cannot always control what comes through that door, whether it's the virtual door, the office, you know, our home office, what have you. And that I am thrilled for, because again, looping back to gender equity, I see, and I hope I'm right, the statistics of women in leadership is going to continue to rise because we are normalizing having full lives, normalizing being able to take care of other facets of our lives and being able to do things from home. Whether it's a hybrid, whether it's all remote, being able to know, we've proved in most cases, again, I know there's shift work and different things within manufacturing areas that this is not applicable to, but in my world, we've proved we can do what we need to do from anywhere. And that to me is going to have a great impact on women in the workforce. And man, I hope I'm right.
Oh, I hope you are right. And I'm going to say you are right. I think we should speak it into existence.
There we go.
I'd love to hear your thoughts. All right. So you mentioned one of the things that you're hopeful to see, and that is this continual acceptance of this external world that, you know, our why. Why are we working and driving ourselves behind this mission for our company every single day? And it's usually who we represent behind us. But let's think about your two daughters, right? Outside of what your hope is for that acceptance of their external world, what else do you hope to see when Brooke applies for her first role, when she's graduating school? What is your hope for that generation?
Gosh, that they know how to pick up a phone and make a phone call.
Yeah.
I'm like so
like, let's not instant message each other, right? Like they're not applying via Slack.
Right. That she can actually pick up the phone and call her mom and tell her what's going on. My hope for Brooke and Layla is that they see no boundaries, that they know that they are capable of doing anything that they want to do. And if there is a barrier, they break it down, that they're bold and that they are in a workforce that is accepting of whoever they are. That is truly my hope, that it's, they are looked at, whether it's their college application, first job, whatever it is, that it's based on their qualifications, their hard work, who they are as individuals, and that there's not a single barrier in front of them. And again, if there is that barrier, they have that strength to know they can break that down. That's my hope.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so much of that boldness, because let me tell you, I've asked that question before for mothers with daughters that are eventually going to go into the workforce. And so much of it is really revolved around your responsiveness. It's just that boldness to be able to do that. And I think some of that's rooted into this, you know, this fear, this imposter syndrome, this, I'm not worthy of it. I'm not going to ask for the raise. I don't want to show who I want to be and who this career trajectory I want to live for every single day. I think so much of it is rooted into that. And it really is going beyond that and knowing that you can go up against anyone and still break down the barrier to get your career out there. So amazing, amazing. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So we're wrapping up today's episode, which makes me a little bit sad because I honestly feel like we can sit here and talk for hours. And I do hope that we have the opportunity to collaborate with one another again, but you know, in a world where we're worried about our generation or the future generation making a good old fashioned phone call, you know, we know that these phones, tablets, this digital world is so over consuming, and it's very easy for us to go into a phone and go into this black hole of news. And I almost think about this truly like I would my day-to-day diet. What am I eating? What am I mindful of? How do I want to stay healthy? I do that on a mental state as well when it comes to the content that I consume. Can you tell us a little bit about your content diet and what are things that you genuinely enjoy taking interest in when it comes to the information age that we're living in right now?
Yeah. I love taking a break from it, to be completely honest. I love putting the phone down and I love, you know, being in the kitchen and cooking or, you know, playing Jenga with the kids or really disconnecting from it. But at the same time, I am always hungry for knowledge. I miss school. I always loved learning. I still love learning. So even today, so listening to podcasts and researching different podcasts that are around issues that I'm very interested in. So again, you know, one of the things I talked about was EY's purpose of building a better working world. ESG is such a big part of that and understanding how we're also going to create a sustainable future for the next generations. Yeah. So that's something I'm really trying to learn as much as possible about right now. What actions can I take personally and within my own home? But then also, how can I be working within EY to help our clients create a sustainable future? So listening to different podcasts and different perspectives from different industries of how people are thinking about creating this sustainable future. That's what I'm really hungry for right now. And then always looking for really powerful women, hearing their stories and how they're dealing with gender inequality and inequity and what they're doing. So I'm a big podcast person. I love to say I'm a big reader. I used to be a big reader. I have a ton of books. I open a book up at the end of the night and I fall asleep after three pages. So I'm trying. I have like two new ones on my nightstand.
Oh my gosh. I have become an expert at ordering books online that I never read.
Yes. But and in I my get mind, so excited when they get to the house. Yes. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And I open it up and I'm out cold. But I'm on the road a lot. So listening to podcasts or even kind of like Audible books, whatnot, going back and forth. That is the audio piece of it really resonates with me because there are times like my eyes just need a break and I feel more like calm about it. If I don't even know if that's the right word, but it just like more this Zen state where I can really be taking in the content that I'm listening to.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that. Well, Allison, it's been so great having you on the Ivy podcast today. We really thank you for spending some time with us. Thank you to our audience as well. I always wrap up my episodes by saying time is one of those valuable gifts or one of the most valuable gifts that we can give to one another. So we really appreciate all of y'all spending some time with us.
Thank you, Angela. It was a pleasure.
Okay, guys, we'll see you guys on the next episode of the Ivy podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.